Hey guys, I'm Eric McLean.
And I'm Kelly Gramlich. It's time to talk some ACC sports.
Let's go.
Happy Wednesday, everyone, and welcome into the Gramlich and McLean podcast brought to you by Traeger Grills. It is time for another off-season episode. We have a very exciting guest, Eric McLean, but first, let's remind the people, we're trying to get to 100 subscribers. Tell a friend, post about it on social. We have a lot of people who listen who already post on social, and we appreciate that, but help us spread the word. 100 subscribers is our goal. You could also leave a review. We'd really appreciate that, Mac. And this guest today, man, I am hyped up. Shout out EMAC for the connection.
KG, we are 2 weeks away from the NFL draft. It's crazy to think about that. So we're going to just flood you guys with analysts, with players, with guys that are going through this process. And let's introduce our Traeger Grills guest of the week for this week, Jim Nagy. Jim is currently the executive director of the Reese Senior Bowl, which has been the college football all-star game since way back in 1950. It's crazy to think how successful it's been and how long it's been around. But before leading the Senior Bowl, Jim was an NFL scout for 18 years. So guys, he knows this business in and out. He was very successful. Of those 18 years, he acquired 4 Super Bowl rings. So when you talk about the best of the best, the top of the top, he was with the Patriots, with the Seattle Seahawks, and really, I mean, he found some diamonds in the rough through this process. It was really cool to talk to him.
And in his spare time, which is extremely minimal, he doesn't have a lot of spare time, Jim somehow finds time to be a rock star for ESPN as an NFL draft analyst. You will see him all across the ESPN family of networks these next couple of weeks leading up to the draft.
All right, guys, put on your NFL GM hats. Let's go. This week's guest is brought to you by Traeger Grills. Welcome to the Traegerhood. Jim, welcome into the show, man. I've got to think that this is the busiest time of the year for you, or at least part of the busiest time. Thanks for joining us. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Absolutely. And like I said, I kind of threw it out there. I feel like there's two, you know, seasons within your year. One of the seasons, you know, it's pre-Senior Bowl. You're doing a bunch of scouting, going to practices, connecting with, you know, some folks and getting ready for the Senior Bowl. And then post-Senior Bowl, you kind of put on your NFL draft analyst hat. You're on ESPN, ACC Network, NFL Network, every radio station you can imagine. And then somehow you make time for, you know, little podcasts like these. I've got to ask you just to kick us off, which busy do you like better? Or are they just so different that they kind of are what they are?
Yeah, they are kind of different. I love coming on your podcast, man. This is cool. I think you do a great job. And Kelly, just meeting Kelly for the first time. But no, it is two different jobs. You know, the summertime we spend looking at tape of the next year's class. I'll jump on those guys in May. Our scouting assistants actually here in the office have already gotten through ACC, Big Ten, and SEC. And now I got to play a lot of catch up once May comes. But I love that time because you're just kind of, you're learning new players. You're getting your hands dirty on players you hadn't seen before. You know, and then we work it through the fall, going to games and you know, watching tape. And like you said, getting out to some practices during 2 days and really connecting with coaches and getting their input on guys that are going to pop. Like last year, Woody McCorvey gave me a great heads up on Cornell Powell. So he was on the radar firmly over the summer. So it did not surprise us when Cornell did what he did this year. But, you know, and then it's kind of recruiting season as the season goes through and connecting with these guys on social media and then, you know, getting them to accept the invite, which is always an exciting time. And then we're in a game cycle and then coming out of it. Yeah. Then it's pre-draft. And that's the hays in the barn at that point. Like I know the players by then. I do have to circle the wagons on some juniors that aren't eligible to play in our game. But that's pretty easy, you know, just going back and looking at 40 or 50 guys. I can get through that in a few weeks. So it's fun. You know, it's ever changing. It's kind of like my time in the NFL. You go from you go from the fall process, then to the all-star process, then the pro day process. And it keeps it fresh. You know, it keeps the whole process fresh. And then you start back over again. So it's very similar in this role.
You mentioned the recruiting process. And I thought that was very interesting to say. Is it difficult to get these guys? Is it kind of like, man, I just got a DM from, you know, Jim Nagy. I'm feeling big time. Or are you having to, you know, really work these guys to be a part of this game? I've got to think that this year was a little different, understanding that this was really the only big event that you get in front of, you know, all these NFL people. But how is it in years past?
Yeah, it's the numbers weren't much different this year. You know, we had a few guys like Rashawn Slater from Northwestern. Trying to think of who else. I'm actually looking up at the board right now. Guys we didn't get because they opted out. Walker Little from Stanford. Guys that, you know, they were afraid they were going to be too rusty because they didn't put the pads on. But really, you go back the year before, we only lost three seniors that didn't accept the invite. And it was Joe Burrow, who obviously went number one, Derek Brown from Auburn, who went like number seven, and then Trayvon Diggs from Alabama. So that's what it's been. It's been about three, four, five guys a year that whether it's them or it's their representatives feel like they don't have much to gain by coming to the Senior Bowl. And again, I've tried to change that narrative. You know, I think that, you know, the conventional wisdom has been, if I'm going to be a first rounder, you know, why would I need the Senior Bowl? And my thing with the agents is those guys can benefit more from the Senior Bowl than guys in the later rounds. Like, you know, I'm staring at a picture right now in my office of Terry McLaurin, the great receiver for the Washington football team. And he came down here a couple of years ago as like a fifth round, sixth round pick and played his way into the third round. That's a big jump and that's a lot of money. But there's more money. If you go from like 24 to 16, there's way more money right in those eight picks than there are jumping three rounds later in the draft. So, you know, that's been my push. And really, you know, we work in tandem with the agents. You know, we try to help them on the front end. You know, like they know that we're watching these guys through the summer. And their recruitment process of these players has gotten so expensive, you know, in terms of paying for training and everything of that nature. So what we try to do is help them on the front end. And then when we invite the players in November and December, like we expect their support of those guys coming to Mobile. So it kind of works hand in hand. But it's been great. You know, it really has been great connecting with these players. It's a totally different role than working in the NFL and scouting them. You get to know these guys on a little different level. And it's been a lot of fun. I've had a lot of fun with it.
That's really interesting to hear that process. And of course, you mentioned the NFL. You were a scout for 18 years, I believe. So why the switch up? Why did you decide to change roles?
It was strictly a family decision. This is my wife's hometown, Mobile, Alabama. We'd been down here since 07. And my kids were getting older. My daughter, when I took the job 3 years ago, was in fourth grade. My son was in seventh. So, and you miss a ton. Yeah. I mean, it's a hard profession. I think people think it's real glamorous. It's definitely not. You guys know the Fairfield off the, Anderson exit there, outside of Clemson. I've probably spent months of my life in that Fairfield and Anderson. And once they built the courtyard in Clemson, that became my new home away from home. So, you know, you just miss a ton. And with my son, now he's playing high school sports, you know, basketball, football player. And I was missing all that stuff. So it really became a family decision. I still get to do what I love to do, and that's evaluate players. But I'm not on the road 200 nights a year. And it has allowed me to kind of broaden my skill set, if you will. Just doing scouting and being on the road for 18 years, you know, you're going to schools every day, writing reports and sending them in and moving on your way. Whereas there's just more to this job in terms of, you know, the sponsorship side, and my hands are in all the business side, managing people, managing budgets. So, you know, public speaking, media, those are things you're never exposed to as a scout. So it's been a nice change, but back to your original question, it was really about the family.
That's incredible. And sounds, you know, kind of like a dream job. You get to hang out with football. You get to still do the NFL type thing. And then you get to be home. You get to be home a lot more. So it sounds picture perfect. That's an awesome opportunity. And so happy that, you know, you got to be able to do that. Let's jump into these specific players, because there were 24 plus or minus. I know there were some late additions and maybe a subtraction or two. 24 former ACC student athletes down with you guys down in Mobile this past January. And I want to discuss a bunch of them. We're not going to hit all 24, obviously. A super simple question that, you know, who out of those 24 caught your eye the most?
During our week or during the scout evaluation process?
Let's say during the week when they were with you, you had hands-on and just seeing them, you know, up close and personal for an entire week.
Sure. I'm kind of working across the board a little bit. Amari and Cornell both had great weeks. Des Fitzpatrick from Louisville, the receiver, had a great week. You know, the guy that really sticks out on the defensive line, Boogie Basham, had a great week down here. He was great. You know, it's really just going kind of position by position. And these guys, I mean, there was a bunch of them that really stood out. You know, I mean, we can work our way through it. You know, Quincy Roche, the defensive end from Miami, had a phenomenal week. He had some great battles with Alex Leatherwood, the tackle from Alabama. So yeah, we can get into those guys, but a bunch of them had great weeks down here.
Well, you talk about the scouting process before the actual week down there in Mobile. And you mentioned Cornell Powell, but you weren't really surprised by him. You have the inside scoop, but still, there's got to be a few that surprised you throughout the 2020 season that ended up in Mobile. Do you have a few names there?
Yeah, from the ACC guys that really rose up, like Michael Carter, running back from North Carolina. Like, we liked him over the summer, but he was kind of more around where the cut line has been on the board the past couple of years. And, man, once we got into the year, like, he was a slam dunk. He had a phenomenal year, and now he's worked himself into, you know, probably going in the second round, I would guess, like maybe slides to the third. But, you know, coming into the year, we thought more like fifth or sixth. So he made a really nice jump. I think Noah Gray, the tight end from Duke, certainly helped himself. Looked like a different player for this year. Quicker, crisper, had a really nice year. So those guys, you know, stand out really at the forefront. And then you look at some juniors, guys that we had 16 juniors in the game this year, which is a huge jump from where we were 3 years ago. Our previous high was 4. You know, the league allowed us to bring in juniors if they graduate by December, I think like 6 or 7 years ago. So I think the players are starting to realize that, and they're, you know, taking more classes over the summer. I know that a perfect example of that was Daniel Jones a couple of years ago, the Duke quarterback. I ran into him at the Manning camp that summer, and I asked him, I said, Daniel, where are you at in school? And will you graduate in December? And he's like, no, I think I'll be a class short. I'm like, man, please go back to your academic advisor right. And add a class. And he did. I said, you know, just give yourself the option. You know, we'll be here waiting for you. And thank God Daniel did. And obviously he came down here and went 6th overall. But so in that junior class, like if Fatu Melifonwu, the corner from Syracuse, is a guy that we didn't even really know was going to graduate until later in the fall. We kind of got wind of that. And he came down here. And again, that's a guy that I don't think gets out of the early second round. I mean, I honestly think that he's better than some of the corners being talked about in the first round. So another guy that we were really happy to get and showed out great. And for us, not having a lot of background, he was a big riser for us because he really came out of nowhere for us.
Jim, so you're telling me that your conversation with Daniel Jones at the Manning camp, where you told him, take one more class, bro, that led him to be the 6th overall pick?
That's what I'm saying. So he,
that's amazing.
To his credit, I mean, there's some guys that might not have done that, but Daniel went back and added it. And I know his quarterbacks coach, David Morris, is a good friend of mine. We go to church together down here in Mobile, and you know, he works with a lot of these good quarterbacks. And so he gave me a heads up. He's like, by the way, Daniel took that extra class. I'm like, okay, cool. Let's see where this goes. So yeah, that was a cool story that he was that just a credit or a class short, and he went back and did it.
Well, I think the question that America now has is, what was that class that he added? Was it like underwater basket weaving? Was it like
Mac? It's Duke
aeronautical space like travel. Something. Like, which one was it?
I don't know if they offer that at Duke, but I don't know. That's a good question. I'll be seeing Daniel here in a little bit, and I'll have to ask him that.
good deal. Well, let's focus on some guys individually. I think a really fun part of, you know, Kelly and I's job is, you know, working with just a conference and working with a conference network like ACC Network is the fact that, you know, we get to really focus on 14, 15 schools, get to be really personable and get to follow these guys and gals for 2 years, 2+ years, very closely. So let's start on the defensive side of the ball. Mm-hmm. And I want to ask you about the guy that you just mentioned in Boogie Basham. I mean, a huge athlete, 6'4", 6'5", 270 plus, very twitchy, has shown that he has, you know, the ability to add pass rush skills and that he's really good with his hands. What did you see from him all week? And do you think he's going to transition to the inside? Is he going to stay at defensive end? What do you see from Boogie moving forward?
Yeah, he had a great week. I think it's really going to depend on where Boogie goes. I think he's very scheme versatile and also versatile within a scheme. I think you're going to be able to move him all around and he's going to get to the quarterback. Like you said, he came in, you know, scouts, we always measure guys shorter than they really are. Eric, you probably got screwed by a couple inches when you came out. But no, Boogie was just under 6'3", but he was 276 pounds. And he ran in the low 4.6s. He was like 4.64, 4.65, which is insane for a guy that size. I mean, that really is. I mean, the word freak gets thrown out way too loosely these days, but that's kind of freaky for that size. And you're talking about a guy that had, you know, close to 20 sacks over the last couple of years. So he's got the production. It's not a projection. I mean, the guy's done it in a good conference. He's got all the physical stuff. And that's why I'm really surprised he's not being talked about more in a lot of these mock first round drafts. In a class that's thin on the interior defensive line, and you've got a guy with freaky athleticism and production to back it up, like, I don't know how that guy isn't one of the top 32 picks.
I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, really good point. Well, speaking of great names, we have to talk about a guy whose name I've been following for years because it's epic, Divine Diablo. But I also remember him vividly because he picked off Trevor Lawrence in the Clemson-Virginia Tech game. He made a great play. And he also had a great week down at the Senior Bowl. So what are you feeling about Divine Diablo, his ceiling in the league?
Yeah, I actually posted a video of that same interception on Twitter a couple of days ago. He's a guy that the league is really high on right now that the media is really not on as much. He's not getting out of the top 50 picks, talking to the guys around the league. I mean, I've talked to some teams. He's their second rated safety in this class. So, again, you're talking about a guy with measurables. He was 6.026, which is, you know, 6'2¾". He was 226 pounds and he ran 4.41, 4.42. So, I mean, he's got linebacker size and he runs faster than most corners. So, again, that's a little bit of a freaky guy. And he's only a 3-year player on defense. He played wide out there his first year. So he's still kind of new. I think that a lot of defensive coaches see that, you know, they see what they can, where they can take a guy like Divine right now. And again, if you're going to have guys like Kyle Pitts in the league, you got to have guys that can match up with him. So you're going to have guys, you know, you got to have big guys that can run. And I think Divine's just kind of scratching the surface. I think his best football is way ahead of him. You know, it's interesting. He wears number 17 at Vatech, and, you know, my background in Seattle, scouting Cam Chancellor coming out and being around Cam in Seattle, it's amazing. They wear the same jersey. Cam was 6.033, 227. And I think Divine was 6.032, 226. So they're almost like identical guys, you know, from like on paper, but they're really different, you know, in terms of their game and their athleticism, they're very different. But yeah, he's going to go a lot higher than where people have him mocked. I can assure you of that.
Now, that's some high praise right there to be compared to Killer Cam there, a guy that would absolutely take your head off and then take the ball away from you to the house. I want to ask you about another guy who actually you just posted a video as well today with Nazeldine, and another guy who is very similar in stature and just the uniqueness of both of these guys with Diablo and Nazeldine there, being able to cover those freaky tight ends, but also still be a safety type guy, a nickel type guy. Do you kind of see the same thing? Will he fall a little farther than 50, or will he surprise some people and, you know, be close to that 50 number as well?
I think he's going to be somewhere around there. You know, Hamza got, unfortunately, you know, played in only two games this year, was really beat up. I don't think he was 100% here at the Senior Bowl. He goes to his pro day. He doesn't run a 40 because he's really gotten through a hamstring. But you look at him again, he's a guy that's over 6'3". He's got 34.5-inch arms, which there's only one guy in the league right now. Clemson's very own Jayron Kearse is the only other guy that's over 6'3" and has long arms like that. So, again, a unique tools package. He's a guy that can really cover. He's a loose athlete. When you get DBs that are that tall, usually they have some hip issues. You know, some lower body tightness, and Hamza doesn't have that. I mean, he's really a bendy guy. And had he been able to, like, take a jump from junior to senior tape, I think we would have been talking about him in the late first. But, you know, the season didn't happen that way for him, unfortunately. He was banged up. But, you know, when healthy, some of that 2019 tape was really, really good. So Again, I think he's a guy that teams are projecting to be a starter, and that's the most important thing. I mean, you really want to draft starters in the first three rounds. So I think he goes somewhere on day two. For
yeah,
sure.
I agree with that. And I think the injury thing is such a key piece. And sometimes the best, you know, ability is just availability and being able to see what you can put on tape. I'm sure there's some concerns there, but there's no doubt. I mean, you look at what he was able to do in high school as a basketball player. I mean, the athletics is really undeniable. Last defensive guy I want to ask you about is Chaz Surratt, a guy who moved from quarterback to linebacker. Really a seamless transition and his physicality cerebrally where he was as a player, I think was more impressive as a junior. And then he took another step as a senior and really developed into a nice prospect. I've seen people questioning his toughness, his ability to play inside. I think, you know, just who he is as a player and being an athlete, he might be better as an outside linebacker, but could you see him being, you know, a Mike on the inside?
Yeah, I mean, he's really, that's a unique, unique conversion going quarterback to linebacker. And the best compliment I can give Chaz is when we watched him last summer, like, I didn't see that. Like, I didn't see a guy that came over from quarterback. You know, like, I don't question his toughness. I see a guy that runs and hits. I think that, you know, the question inside, if you're playing him stacked inside the box a bunch, is does he have the, you know, the substance to hold up when big people get on him? But so maybe he is a better fit outside, but I don't question the physicality or toughness at all. I think he's the best blitzing linebacker in this draft. I think he's got a really good knack for timing that and disguising that and then pulling the trigger and closing. So, you know, if you're looking at teams that really like to bring people like Pittsburgh, you know, I think he's a great fit there. I think that, you know, the questions are instincts right now, and that's because he hasn't played the position. I think that's a work in progress. I think he's going to start seeing things slower. The game's going to start moving slower the more he plays. So, you know, in terms of the athlete and, you know, the explosion and the run and hit ability and the ability to cover and play in space, I think he's exactly what the league's looking for at linebacker right now.
Yeah, that's a crazy transition, quarterback to linebacker, two very different positions. Let's switch to the offense because Mac and I are not defensive-minded people. We're offensive-minded people. So I'm surprised.
So you were a scorer? Kelly, you were a scorer?
I was a shooter.
Big time. Hey, man,
I played about as much defense as Mac, and Mac didn't even play on the defensive side of the ball. So here we are.
At least you own it. At least you're owning it right now.
You got to know your strengths. But speaking of offense, we talked a little bit about Cornell Powell. I want to start with Amari Rodgers, these Clemson wide receivers. Rodgers is a guy that he had an ACL, and it felt like he wasn't really healthy in 19. 2020, he looked like a different player. What did you see that was so different about Amari, and what are his best translatable skills to the next level?
Yeah, you nailed it. I mean, he did look like a different player. We were really lukewarm on Amari over the summer. You know, his dad being T. Martin and T. Martin being a Mobile native and one of our local guys down here, I really wanted to like Amari. But that junior tape coming off that injury just was what it was. I mean, he was a slot that didn't have a lot of burst. And that position, you really need to have that short area explosion. And this year was different. I mean, you guys saw it on a weekly basis. I mean, he got the ball in his hands, and there was serious juice. So that was cool to see, you know, a full year removed from the injury, what he looked like. And again, we're talking about there's some slots in this draft. There's some smaller slots that are, you know, $180, $190. Amari's 212 pounds. I mean, this guy's built like a running back. You get the ball to him quick. He's got that really powerful base. He runs through a lot of contact. You know, I do think you saw it at the pro day. They lined him up in the backfield some. He took some reps back there. I thought it was really smart of him. I reached out to him afterwards. I thought it was smart because, you know, coordinators, the league is doing a lot better job of using kind of hybrid type players right now than they ever have. And to see Amari do that and do some things out of the backfield, if I'm an offensive coordinator, I love that. You know, we had Debo Samuel from South Carolina in the game a couple of years ago, and we've all seen what Debo's done as a pro with the 49ers. I think Amari's a very good comp for Debo. You know, they're both got that power in their lower half, and they're both really, really rugged with the ball in their hands, and they both got juice. So, yeah, he was a guy that definitely made a really, really nice jump this year.
He did. And talk about a guy benefiting from the season and the season being played. His future is so different if that season is not played. And then same with Cornell Powell. Look, you said that Woody McCorvey spoke to you about Cornell Powell. I wasn't hearing any of that. I do radio down in Clemson. We were like, all right, I mean, Cornell Powell's going to be on the team. We'll see what happens. He has absolutely blown people away. And what do you think about him next level? Similar to Amari, not as stocky, but definitely has some lower body strength.
Yeah, and he's got some upper body strength. Did you see him without a shirt on at the pro day?
He was a Greek god.
We're all trying
to just be like that.
He hasn't eaten a carb in years.
Yeah, I saw Cornell at pictures of him at Trevor Lawrence's wedding the other day. I don't know why he had a shirt on. Yeah, I mean, if I was him, I'd walk around with my shirt on all the time. But no, he's he's a specimen. But what you saw on tape this year was a guy that, you know, made big plays. The guy's got legit big play ability. I mean, he ran in the 4.5s. So that wasn't like high 4.4s, mid 4.5s, somewhere in that range, depending on the scout that you talked to that was there. So it's not like a 4.3 guy, but in games with his pads on, certain guys carry their pads better on the field than other guys. And Cornell can stretch the field. He makes plays down the field. He's really good in contested situations. He's big and strong. You know, Woody's got a great comp for him. Woody threw out the Sterling Sharp comp, and that predates both of you. I don't even know if you guys were born when Sterling was playing, but Sterling was an awesome player. Sterling was like a Hall of Fame player had he not his career been cut short by injuries there in Green Bay. And I see that comparison. You know, I don't know. I mean, that's a lofty, lofty comparison, but I do see in terms of the body composition and kind of the way he plays the game. So yeah, Cornell, and where Cornell really benefits, guys, is what he did at Clemson in terms of sticking it out. You know, in the day and age of the transfer portal, and, you know, I'm not getting my playing time and I'm not getting my touches, I'm gone. You know, Cornell played behind a lot of good players. It's been a crowded receiver room, and he kind of went against the grain and stuck it out. And I think that a lot of teams are putting value in that right now in terms of what kind of guy Cornell is. So, both those guys, Amari and Cornell, really benefited from having a 2020 season, no doubt.
Before we move on to another player here, I want you to put on your scout hat, because you did it for 18 years. You had unbelievable success. With what you just mentioned, crowded rooms, not getting touches, not getting, you know, as many passes as maybe they would want to, how do you guys evaluate that? How do you, you know, separate the numbers from what you see? Even though he's not getting the ball thrown to him, his routes are unbelievable. His effort is so good. How do you guys separate that and identify, man, this guy is still, you know, it's a little bit different for basketball. A sixth man of the year comes in and he's a first round draft pick. It's like, this dude couldn't even start for his team. I don't think it's that drastic in football, but how do you guys identify that man, this is a very talented player?
Yeah. I think stats are really overrated. They really are. I mean, I think, you know, all these positions offensively, you know, receivers, a hugely dependent position. Quarterback is a hugely dependent position. So you just got to go with what you have. You got to go with the tape you have. And again, sometimes it's a smaller sample size, but you got to go with what you have. And you got to apply the traits to it. I mean, the NFL, if you want to boil it down, it's a big, fast, strong league. You know, you really, there's very few guys. There's very few outliers that fall out of a certain spectrum at certain positions. So you, first of all, you got to have the traits, and then, you know, you should be able to identify a skill set, you know, the longer you've scouted. I mean, you should be able to do it. I mean, we had a guy in this year's Senior Bowl, Chris Evans, a running back from Michigan, who had 11 carries this year at Michigan. And, you know, he came down here, had an awesome week. You go back in his play history, there was enough there to know that Chris is an NFL player. He had a good week down here, and then he goes to a pro day and he jumps 41 inches and 11.3 on the broad jump or whatever, you know, and runs 4.43. That dude's getting drafted. I mean, he's going to go in probably the fourth or fifth round of this year's draft. He had 11 carries this year as a senior. So you really got to go with what you have to go on and focus on the traits and what the guy can become. And then you look into the makeup of the player as well. And that really helps Cornell, is the makeup of the guy, and teams are going to buy into what he's made of.
Thank you for diving into that. I think it's so important. Now, let's move to a guy, as I said, that, you know, probably gave you more than enough in regards to stats, things that he did, plays that he made, and Michael Carter from UNC. You touched on him a little bit earlier. I think he's the second best running back in this draft. He really gives me Clyde Edwards-Helaire vibes with being a small guy, but super effective as a runner and then as a pass catcher as well. What did you guys see from him this week that I guess was complimentary, you know, to his unbelievable season that I guess just proves that, you know, he's going to be able to have this sustained success in the NFL?
Very simply, some guys know how to run it and some guys don't. And he knows how to run it. You know, you can get big, fast, strong guys that don't see it and don't have the patience. You know that trying to block for him. This dude just knows how to tote it. And, you know, he's like, I get the Clyde Edwards-Helaire comparison because they're both like low to the ground, you know, shifty, great, got great lateral base to them. So they got that lateral change of direction, great feet, you know, low center gravity, pinball off a lot of stuff. And where Michael really, again, similar to Amari, where I saw a more explosive player, I thought Michael looked more explosive this year. You saw more breakout runs, you know, really good in the pass game. Although he's a smaller target, if you can put it on him, he's really dangerous when he gets in space. So, he's a really, really good football player. He was a cool guy for us to get for the Senior Bowl this year because he's somewhat local over in the panhandle of Florida, over in Pensacola area. So his family was all back over here. I got to meet all his folks with, you know, all his people when he was here for the game. And he's another guy. I mean, we've talked about a bunch of them so far that really, really benefited from having a season this year.
So one guy that did not play was Sage Surratt. And I think this is such an interesting case. We talked about his brother. He had a great 19, opted out again, fine decision, whatever. But how does that affect him moving forward? And I know he's got great measurables, but do you feel like this is a guy that can do some damage in the league?
Yeah, you know, Sage is interesting in the decision. I didn't talk to him a lot about it, but Sage is a good football player, right? Like he wasn't going to be a good tester. He did not run well at Wake's Pro Day. In fact, Boogie Basham ran faster, believe it or not. So like it made sense to me that Sage would play football because when he gets on a field and you throw it up to him, he makes plays. Now, Again, I didn't have that conversation. Maybe it was something COVID related. I don't know. His brother did play. So I don't know what went into it. But Sage is a good football player. I think he's being lost in the draft process right now because of the 40 time. But we knew that going back in the fall. We talked to the guys at Wake last summer and they told us he was going to run, you know, 4.65 to 4.7. Like that is what he was going to be. So but if you just get back to what he does, you know, playing above the rim and making contested ball catches. You know, and be strong in the intermediate, short to intermediate game. Like he's a really good football player. So again, he might be sliding a little bit right now for teams that put too much value in a 40 time, but a really good football player. And I can see him having a role next year just because he has a skill set that fits right away. And that's at minimum, he helps you on Sundays in the red zone.
No question about it. I think Sage, again, would have benefited from playing. Like you just said, we knew he wasn't going to test well. But the decision was made, and he'll be just fine when he gets on a team. Last guy that we want to ask you about, and thank you so much for your time, is tight end Hunter Long, a guy who I thought at Boston College, who if he would have came back for one more year at BC, he probably, you know, could have been fighting for tight end one next year. But he decided to leave. He's got all the measurables. He runs very well, very just a guy that has caught a ton of passes. So you talk about statistically what he can do, can put his hand in the dirt. What were some of the things that you guys saw from Hunter that's going to translate well to the next level?
I mean, I sound like a broken record, but he's another guy that took a nice jump because we watched him over the summer. We kind of had a heads up that he might graduate. And so we had our eyes on him off 19 tape and route running, took a nice jump this year, looked quicker in and out of breaks, very reliable hands. I mean, Hunter's a big guy now. He's over 6'5". He's legitimately in the 250s, 260 range. So he's a guy you feel good about putting his hand in the dirt and playing him attached. Like you said, he caught a million balls. I think he might have been the most productive tight end in college football outside of Kyle Pitts this year in terms of like receptions. But I think he's a day two player all day long. It'll be interesting to see where he goes on day two. But, you know, after Kyle Pitts, it's Hunter, it's Freiermuth, it's maybe Brevin Jordan in that conversation. But you know, everyone's looking for tight ends that can actually put their hand in the ground and give them something in the run game. And you're not tipping your hat when they're on the football field. And Hunter does that. And he's coming from a program. I mean, you know what you're getting out of BC. You're getting tough guys. You're getting physical guys. You're getting guys that play hurt. I mean, Hunter was not 100% here at the Senior Bowl. He gutted through something down here all week. And my hat's off to him. Like he a lot of guys make excuses to kind of tap out at the end of Senior Bowl week. They put a couple of days into practice. They let the league see them. And Hunter gutted all the way through the game. And, you know, I'll always respect him for it. Like, he's, if I was with a team and we were sitting there on day two, and I would be pounding the table for that guy, because I know what I'm getting. I'm getting a really good, tough, physical football player that's going to be a pro for a long, long time. That dude's going to play 10, 12 years. However long Hunter Long wants to play, he's going to play.
This is great insight, Jim. You are a fountain of knowledge. This is great. I've learned a lot. And I do have a very important question before we let you run. I'm assuming, as the executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl, do you have a lifetime supply of Reese's? And, like, how does that work? Is your house full of chocolate? Like, what's the deal?
There's nothing under contract, but we do get 2 400-pound pallets dropped off at the office twice a year. They'll come in and they'll drop a 400-pound pallet of candy. The biggest upside since I came here, one of my children has a peanut allergy. So I was like, oh man, it's going to be good for one of my kids and not the other. But they have Twizzlers. We got Milk Duds. We got Jolly Ranchers and Almond Joys. And I mean, the candy spectrum at Hershey goes well beyond the peanut butter cup. So
if you need either of our addresses, please just let us know. Whatever you need, you can send it this way.
I'll say this, though. It's dangerous. Like, you're having a stressful day, and it's real easy to walk by the candy closet and grab yourself some peanut butter cups or whatnot. So, no, it's kind of a double-edged sword. It's great, but you can get your full of sugar for sure.
You have a candy closet. That's the dream.
Yeah, I
have a tool closet. Jim has a candy closet. That's the difference.
That's right.
Jim, this was so much fun. Thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it today.
Yeah, appreciate you having me on. This was fun. I'll do it anytime.
What an awesome interview with Jim. We really appreciate his time. And I was just blown away by him. Mac, I know you know him. This was my first time meeting him over Zoom. But to see him just sit there in his chair and examine his big board where he has all these prospects listed, and you'd ask him about someone, he'd look up at the big board and then he'd just completely break down their game. And I asked him to show me the big board when we were done. All it had was names. That's it. He would just look up at the board, he would see a name and rattle off a minute and a half about that player like it was nothing. So it's not like he really had notes. It was just incredible. And he gave us some inside info. Mac, Divine Diablo, probably going to go higher than some people think. Boogie Basham, he was really high on Boogie Basham, really high on Amari Rodgers. So those are guys to watch. But I felt like I was getting to peek behind the curtain a little bit and get some inside info from Jim.
Listen, some people think that we have a dream job being able to talk about ACC sports and then also have and talk about Traeger, our great sponsor here. But let me just tell you guys, Reese's is a close second. And I have a candy closet, not only would I be 400 pounds, but I would be very happy and living a great life. I'm right there with you, Kelly. I mean, some of this inside stuff that, you know, he was dropping with us, you just think of the relationships this guy has built on both sides. I mean, he's in the media. He's with the agents. He's with the NFL. He's with the scout. I mean, it's an awesome job. But Jim was the Traeger guest of the week. Let me tell you guys a little bit about our great friends over at Traeger Grills. Traeger is the only wood-fired outdoor grill that smokes, grills, barbecues, and even bakes. And by the way, guys, if you were looking at my Instagram story or on Twitter, y'all, I just cooked up some of the best lobster I've ever had in my life. That was the first time I ever done it. And that just goes to show you, Traeger makes everything so easy. It tasted unbelievably good. The wood fire, just the different flavors of pellets that we burn in that thing, you can taste it. And I could taste it right there in the lobster. Nothing beats the flavor of food cooked over that wood fire. There are endless possibilities on your Traeger. I try to show it to you guys multiple times throughout the week. It's so easy to use. I feel like a pro every time. Visit TraegerGrills.com/ACC to find your local Traeger dealer today.
Your lobster. Cook some lobster over there, Eric McLean.
You know, I was corrected by some of the Lindstrom family. If you guys know anything about Boston College, there's been approximately 2,000 Lindstroms that have gone through Boston College. One of them corrected me in that I needed to add an H at the end of my lobster just to get the full effect. So we cleared that up. We got it figured out. But Kelly, let's move on to our ACC Spotlight of the Week. Again, guys, this is where we discuss spring football, baseball, soccer, lacrosse, softball, all these great things that are going on in the ACC, just different storylines that Kelly and I have seen really throughout. So, Kelly, why don't you go first and start with your ACC Spotlight of the Week?
Well, Mac, you know I've been locked into softball, and I've been watching a lot of it on ACC Network. It's a fun product. It's a great game. It goes by quickly. And there are specifically four teams in the ACC that are really playing at a high level: Florida State, Clemson, Virginia Tech, and Duke. And Clemson and Duke are both very, very young programs. All those teams are ranked in the top 25. I want to specifically talk about Valerie Cagle, the freshman, because she got the year back from last year, and she should have because their season was basically cut in half. The freshman pitcher and all-around player.
Freak show dominant athlete.
Yes.
I mean, I don't really even know where we classify her other than just amazing.
No doubt. She is making her mark. I think she's definitely a favorite right now for ACC Player of the Year and Pitcher of the Year. She leads the ACC in ERA, and she's 18th nationally in that stat. And here's the week she had, Mac. Okay, they played six games. Clemson went 6-0. As a hitter, she hit .500, hit two home runs, seven RBI, six runs scored. As a pitcher, she pitched 23.2 innings, no earned runs, three wins, 36 strikeouts, and two, not one, Mac, two no-hitters. That is the kind of week that we all hope to have when we wake up on Monday morning. But the reality is most of us don't, but Valerie Cagle did. So keep an eye on her. Keep an eye on the second year program at Clemson. And keep an eye as well on Duke, Virginia Tech, Florida State. I think all those teams are going to make some noise in the postseason, Mac.
Listen, some people tell you to, you know, get somebody, get something that can do both. Get you a girl that can do it all. Valerie Cagle, I mean, that has to be the best stat line for a single week of anybody all time. I mean, she was absolutely dominant, and it was more than impressive to see. Like you said, though, ACC softball is going to make some absolute noise. Cannot wait to see them when we get into the postseason. How about two sports that are one sport, men's and women's side, who are in the postseason and dominating? And what's interesting about soccer, as we move into my ACC Spotlight of the Week here, Kelly, is soccer played a bit of a season in the fall, but now they're doing, you know, the bigger deal where they have the NCAA tournament. So, you know, in the fall, there were ACC championships that were held and played, but now we're kind of doing it over where they didn't play many games. I think, you know, some people have played as many as 10, but guys, listen to this number. The ACC put five teams who earned bids on the men and the women's side, most of any conference for the men, and tied for the most on the women's side. On the men's side, this is the eighth straight season the ACC has placed the most teams in the tournament. So you talk about dominance. You talk about, you know what time it is when you see an ACC team on your out-of-conference schedule. It's no joke at all. So here's the seeds. Clemson was the one seed on the men's side. Pitt was the two seed. Wake was the five seed. And then UNC and Virginia Tech both getting in there. Really, I mean, you look at Pitt and Clemson, I mean, they're dominant. Two of the most dominant teams in the country. Again, this isn't like basketball where there's four number one seeds, four number two seeds. There's just one. So it is the number one overall seed, the number two overall seed. And Clemson and Pitt, we just saw those two teams play about a week ago, and it's fireworks every time they're on the stage. So you would hope you get to see that in a national championship type setting. On the women's side, again, we mentioned having five bids there. FSU, the number one overall seed. UNC, number two seed. So both in men's and women's, the ACC has secured the number one and the number two seed. Duke is the nine seed. Clemson on the women's side is 14. And then Virginia, guys, it's going to be a fun NCAA tournament. That tournament begins April 29th at sites across the state of North Carolina. So right here in my home state. And then they will accumulate the NCAA Cup May 14th and 17th. That'll be played in Cary, North Carolina. So not only are we a football conference, but we're a football conference, okay? And we're doing it on all three sides. And it's a lot of fun in the ACC.
No doubt about it, Mac. And you mentioned these five teams in for each league. Shout out to North Carolina and Clemson for getting both the men's and women's teams in the field. And to get the number one and number two overall seeds on both sides of the sport, on the men's and women's side, is absolutely incredible. And the ACC, look, it'll eat you up and spit you out, okay? It can be tough to go through and have a very good season in the ACC. And it seems like I've heard for years the ACC is the best soccer conference on both sides. And it just seems like every year it gets better. I don't even know how they do that. It's tough because we've seen basketball struggle to hold on to its dominance, but soccer just has no issue continuing to be an elite or the elite league in the country.
There is no question about it. Guys, if you haven't already, we've said it 1,000 times on this podcast. Go check out and give some love to our producer, Richmond Weaver. He's got a fantastic podcast, Rich Take on Sports. You can find that anywhere you get your podcast. He has some great guests, some great topics, really fun episodes over there. Kelly and I both have been on that podcast. You won't want to miss that. But that's it for this episode. Thank you guys for tuning in to another great one brought to you by our friends over at Traeger Grills. Thank you for listening as always. If you haven't already, go over to iTunes, subscribe to our podcast. We're trying to get to that big number 100. Drop us a little rating, a little review. We would greatly appreciate that. But until next time, we'll see you.